This summer at Wolf Trap, Sting, Trombone Shorty, Lauren Daigle, Harry Connick Jr., Young the Giant, A.R. Rahman, Sarah McLachlan, and many more. Tickets on sale now at wolftrap.org.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. I don't know if you knew this, but anyone can get the same premium wireless for $15 a month plan that I've been enjoying. It's not just for celebrities. So do like I did and have one of your assistant's assistants switch you to Mint Mobile today. I'm told it's super easy to do at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Bituation Room. I am your host, Francesca Fiorentini, and we have a very special interview today with filmmaker Anne-Marie Jasser, who has just released with Watermelon Pictures a film called Palestine 36, which is a biographical film about Palestine in 1936 under British colonial rule, with the rising immigration of Zionists and Jews to Palestine. And it is beautiful. It's fascinating. It's devastating. It is very moving. And I can't wait to speak to her about this. We're recording this on Wednesday, April 8th. Of course, we've just narrowly avoided an expansion of this war in Iran with a 2-week ceasefire, but Israel's not paying attention to that because they've continued to bomb Lebanon. So that's sort of the moment that we're in right now recording this. And more relevant than ever is this film and Anne-Marie's work. So I want to just give her a proper intro and then bring in and then show the trailer to y'all. So she has written and directed over 16 films. Her films have premiered in Cannes, Berlin, Venice, and Locarno, Rotterdam, Toronto. All of her 4 feature films were selected as Palestine's official Oscar entries. Her short film, like 20 Impossibles, was the first Arab short film in history to be selected in Cannes and continued to break ground as a finalist for the Academy Awards. This was a film I saw in 2007, Jasser's Salt of This Sea, which went on to win a Fipresky Critics Award and 14 other international awards, including Best Film in Milan. Her second feature, When I Saw You, won Best Asian Film in Berlinale and also a nomination at the Asian Pacific Screen Awards. She served as also a judge and jury on many different film festivals, including Cannes, Sundance, Berlin. And her fourth feature film, this film, Palestine 36, is, it is very ambitious, I would argue. It pulls off everything, truly wonderfully done. And I want to play you all a clip from the trailer so you get a sense of what we're talking about here.
The relationship between us and our land. That is a work of thousands of years.
A new page in history is written today.
Huna Sultan Quds. This is Jerusalem calling.
والله يا جماعة الناس مش لاقية توكل كيف العاد بدها تدفع ديون والصهاينة قاعدين بأخذوا في أراضينا.
The British court transferred your land to the settlers.
بلادنا عرفت ناس من ديانات كثيرة.
هذول هم جيران؟ هذول جايين يقعدوا محلنا مش معانا.
ولا راح يعملوا إشي الإنجليز. كلتكم ليش عم تسلح؟
We are asking for your help in protecting our villages.
I ask you all have faith that Arab and Jew can live together. With your help, we can create a united and peaceful holy land.
We are looking for armed bandits.
We've shut down every Arab printing press. We set up checkposts and curfews. There has to be another way.
There isn't.
إذا طخوني مين حيجيب محلي؟
أول مرة بحياتي خايف أموت.
نحن عم نحارب عشان استقلالنا.
We are at the crossroads of a major moment in time. Consider which side of history you want to be on.
There you have it. And then let me bring her in, the writer and director of this film, Anne-Marie Jasser. Welcome. Thank you so much for taking time. I know it's like 10 p.m. where you are.
It's okay. It's good to be here. Thank you. Yes. And I'm so happy to know you watch Salt of the Sea.
Yes, yes. With Suhail.
Suhair Hamad.
Suhair. And you know, when I was sort of a young activist, fighting against and trying to stop the war in Iraq and learning about Palestine, yes, Suhair's words, and I saw her perform multiple times. I saw Salt of the Sea. And yeah, that was all kind of part of understanding. And I think, you know, reflecting on it, to be honest with you, I think the last 20 years, sadly, I think Americans have let the issue of Palestine kind of languish and not really, even on the American left, not take it up in the way that we needed to. And of course, you know, obviously in post October 7th, and we are forced to, you know, and all of the death and destruction that our government has supported. And I want to talk about this because it's, first of all, it is a historical film, but it is deeply personal. Each of the characters goes through their own, you know, their own storyline, their own arc, their own revelation. And, you know, from a small boy who is against sort of rebelling with arms or doesn't understand and says, you know, God protects us, why would we need guns to protect us? And then he goes into, you know, embracing that strategy and getting, you know, being sort of, after seeing so much death and destruction, taking matters into his own hands. You know, it's really fantastic. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate
that. And yeah, and so let's talk about it, because really we're not talking about Zionist settlers very much, and we don't see them very much in the film. I do want to talk about when we do see them, but this is about British colonial rule and the beginnings of Zionism, the beginnings of these, you know, settlements, and kind of when, you know, all the wheels came off. You really feel like this is like a movie of sort of when the wheels came off of a already very tenuous situation. But can you just sort of situate us, what was happening in 1936, and also how long had British colonial rule been happening in Palestine?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a little bit of the background. Of course, Palestine was under, you know, Ottoman rule for 400 years. And then in 1919, the British come in and take over. So by the time we're at the beginning of this film, which is 36, as you said, the British have been almost already 20 years in Palestine. And it is important to say there were other uprisings. There was uprisings against the Zionists, against the Ottomans, and then with the British. But this moment is really marks sort of the beginning of the real, you know, organized struggle for, you know, independence, because it was just a mass uprising, and it was, you know, not just a small pocket here or there. It was across the whole country. It erupted. And so in many ways, it's really the first uprising, the first intifada, actually. So that's sort of the backstory of it. It's against British colonialism, and it's also against the fact that, you know, Zionism is, you know, coming, you know, Zionists are coming, Jews are fleeing Europe for safety, but there's a political, you know, the side of it, which is Zionism, which is, you know, the project, which is to take over, you know, Palestine eventually. And I think it was very clear at that time. So, but I, you know, the focus really of the film is the British complicity in all of this.
Yes.
And how they sort of, you know, allowed this to happen, and how Zionism for them was a means to protect empire. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the first impression of the film for me is this is 100 years later, you know, 90 years later, exactly the same scenes that we're seeing play out in the West Bank. The difference is the occupying army is the IDF. the sort of feckless imperial power that sort of funds this and oversees it is the United States, which has taken over from British colonial rule. But to your point, and you do such a great job of writing these characters, and it's not just like all British bad, all, you know, all Arabs, right. Like all, like it is, yeah. There is nuance, and there is an interesting sort of, you know, in the trailer you saw, you know, like, you know, the idea of like, this is the only way we have to, you know, we have to quell them, and we put this down, and we have to separate, you know, Jews and Arabs. This is the only way. And that's not necessarily, there isn't necessarily just one way.
That's true.
Yeah. And even as evidenced by, you know, what was there before, but also I don't want to say camaraderie, but there is sort of a living alongside, you know, I mean, gosh, how much can you have camaraderie with a colonial occupier or presence? But like, it didn't seem like, I don't know, that the British were out to completely subdue the Arab population. That was the goal. But then when Zionism sort of came into the picture, it's like, oh, this is kind of perfect. And to your point, you write in the script, there is a moment where they're effectively saying, you know, look, this is going to be great. We support the Zionist project, and this is kind of our eyes and ears on the Arab world, on like any kind of uprisings that happen in the future. Kind of like in the long run, this is going to be good for, you know, Britain.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's what you just said also just, you know, made me think that, you know, it's also that the British policy changed, and you know, in the first scene with Jeremy Irons in the film where he plays the High Commissioner, it's the radio inauguration, and he's talking about, you know, we will bring the communities together. We won't talk about politics, but we will bring these two communities together. And, you know, and he's there with, you know, his secretary, you know, Thomas, who actually is somebody who is, you know, a sympathetic character and feels that this project, the, you know, British colonials project, has its, you know, it has something helpful and good that it's doing. That's how he feels at the beginning of it. The second time we see, you know, the Jeremy Irons character is, you know, the High Commissioner is when there's the women's demonstration, and he says, my hands are tied by London. There's not much I can do. And he sort of is like, you know, wishy-washy with them. And the final time we see him is when he says, they will eat us alive. We have to completely separate, you know, these two people, because they will eat us alive. And I think that, you know, I did want to, you know, play with that. Those are the three scenes of the High Commissioner in which, you know, things do change, because it's sort of like, well, is this working? No, this isn't working. So let's try this way. And then, of course, you know, Ord Wingate's character, who was, you know, the Israelis consider the godfather of the, you know, Israeli army. He was, you know, he had these, what he called the special night squads, and they were, you know, militant, you know, units that were based inside the Jewish settlements, inside the colonies. And, you know,
and
so
he
there was
British. I mean, this is the guy, this is.
And he was not Jewish.
And he was not Jewish. Yeah. And he's the one who's, you know, at the end there in that a trailer saying, which side of history do you want to be on? And we sort of, you know, he and Thomas are representing these two different sides. And I think you're right that, You represent that so well, that as the politics change, as the pressures change, we know that, you know, the Zionist project behind the scenes is very much lobbying, you know, London, and, you know, is suddenly, again, like what is tenuous, kind of the wheels come off. And I want to go, before we get into like kind of how it progresses, Palestinians in this film, I mean, the Arab population, they're striking against, you know, because of like, not being paid their wages by the, you know, the British, for them using like, you know, incoming, you know, labor from the Jewish communities. Like, what was also the situation there in terms of, like how they were actually treated? I mean, they're sort of lauding the High Commissioner lauds, you know, Liam Cunningham's character, he just got back from India, you know, doing great work, you know, putting down the uprising in India. And you're like, we all know how that turned out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting about the strike, because, you know, that strike was the longest strike in history at that moment. And this uprising, in fact, was arguably one of the longest and largest uprisings against colonial rule at the time. But the strike was a 6-month strike, and it started at the ports, and it started, you know, and the situation at the ports where one of our characters, Khaled, is based, there were other strikes. And it was like, you know, what was happening was that, you know, the British were, they had, you know, the Arab labor and Jewish labor. The Jewish laborers were more organized, were unionizing. There was a whole situation there. And, you know, the film sort of flirts with that a little bit, but there's much more to say about it.
But that's fascinating, right? They're being played off of one another by the colonial powers.
Yeah, yeah.
I did want to talk about the one representation, really, of some of the, you know, kind of the early, I guess they're kibbutzim, or the, you know, the new Jewish emigres. Mm. Is the killing of basically the main character's father gets killed in the first act. And this is, it's devastating, but it happens in an instant. And it was kind of like, you see these settlements and the ways we see settlements today. Here's a settlement and his father is killed in the middle of the night. After they're told to like, stop, don't come any further. And it didn't seem like they were, instigating any kind of violence or whatnot, whatever, it doesn't matter. He gets killed. And there is a very clear sense that the kind of the incoming Jewish like population is almost much more adverse to, and I think you're representing this, integration with the Arab population than even the colonizers or than even the British are, which, you know, there's scenes of parties together. There's scenes of like, okay, some of the more educated, you know, Arabs and the journalists, as well as like the British, you know, officers, they might hang out in the same parties. But then there's a whole kind of like this outsider in the first, you know, one of the first scenes, the young girl asks her mom or her sister, like, why do they not, why are they building so separate from us? Like they don't want to integrate. And this is kind of a question that you sort of leave there open-ended.
Yeah, she's talking to her mother and she says, you know, why do they come here? Why don't their countries want them? And the mother says, I don't know. Why don't they want them? And why do they build fences?
Yes.
Because, you know, it's something that, you know, and you hear a lot of Palestinians talk about this, you know, of course there are indigenous Jewish Palestinians that, you know, and then there were Jews who had been coming for hundreds of years for, you know, religious reasons or whatever, coming to Palestine and settling in Palestine. And they were very much part of the society and of the world of Palestine. Then when the settlers, you know, started to come in as Zionists, mm-hmm. in which they separated themselves, which they built what they were calling the stock. I forgot what the word is. There's a Hebrew word in which they were basically, you build a tower and a stockade and tower. It's mm-hmm. called where you build, if you build a wooden, tower that we see in the film.
Yes.
And you build a fence. That's like the beginning of a settlement. And right. then they would, so you have in the film, there's one across from them. And then a second one gets built. And if you look at Palestine today, of course, like, you know, my city of Bethlehem, you stand in Bethlehem, you look all around you, left, right. I mean, you just north, south, you make a circle. It's completely surrounded by settlements, which are still today in that sort of built in that way. Like you get on a hilltop and you put down, you know, your tower and you say, now it's mine. Bethlehem cannot expand today, naturally yeah. expand because it's completely encircled by this idea. There's, of course, the repercussions of what that means today. But I think also what Zionism was, you know, for Palestinians at that time is that here you have a place where communities have been coming for hundreds of years.
Right.
You know, and a lot of communities also fleeing, you know, persecution, like the Circassian community, like the Armenian community, you know, Bosnians came to Palestine in the 1800s. Like these communities fled their countries and moved to Palestine for safety, and they became part of Palestine, of yeah. society. But Zionism was different because it wasn't like hundreds of years Jews have been moving and, you know, been there's never been a time where I think there were not Jews in Palestine. But when it became about, you know, ethnic cleansing, when it yeah. became about, you know, dispossession, like taking, you know, separation, and which the British definitely promoted this idea. It became something different. It was about making it a monolithic place for Jews only.
It became much more
talking about that today. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the way also you sort of represent kind of like Yusuf coming kind of from the countryside, versus someone in the city. It's so much more palpable. You know, they're asking him like, what are you seeing out there? And it's like, we're losing our land. You know, our land is being given away. People can't feed their families. And I thought that was very striking, of course, because you see it similar, you know, today as well, and this disconnect. And you in 1936, you know, a community of farmers, now in 2026, a, you know, largely farmers who are being dispossessed of their lands, you know, what little lands they still have. Speaking about
no other land, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's not so far apart.
Yes. Well, let's talk about the Peel Commission, right? Like, because this is also kind of what begins. And I do want to talk about the uprising or the rebel attack that happens that then leads to basically the wholesale destruction of a village. But before that, this Peel Commission, which really marks the oh shit moment that you're speaking of, like this is not about, you know, seeking a safe haven and living amongst us. This is about creating an entire state, an entire separate area, and dispossessing us. What was the Peel Commission, and why was it so momentous?
I think the Peel Commission officially is where it was the first proposal of partitioning Palestine was really like on the table. And so they had this, you know, commissioners who came from the UK. They spent several months in the country interviewing people, mostly Jewish leaders, British. Sorry, my cat wants to be part
so
of
so cute. And,
you know, they were going to come up with the solution. And the solution they came up with was to divide, to partition Palestine. That was the proposal. And that they would, you would have Jewish ruled area, and you would have an Arab ruled area. The Arab ruled area was of course not ruled by Palestinians, but actually by Transjordan, which was also, you know, controlled by the British really. So this is sort of, you know, way before the Nakba. This is the conversation that where it was going politically.
Yeah.
That's what's happening with that. And so we have that moment in the film where, you know, what we hear on the radio is the conclusion of the Peel Commission. This is the solution that they came up with of how things should be.
On the radio that wasn't supposed to be political.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that was, you know, I think for people, you know, looking back on it from hindsight is really difficult because, you know, you say today, like, oh, there's going to be two states, even though, you know, tangibly, concretely, objectively, that is kind of an impossibility nor what I politically advocate for right now. But you think, oh, wow, okay, someone's actually advocating for two separate areas. That makes sense. But at the time, this makes absolutely no sense. This is very much a hostile takeover. And there's no what kind of negotiation when this is straight up other people's, this is their land, this is an indigenous population. And yes, the government, and I actually want to ask you more, what was the status of sort of a self-governance for the Arab population there at the time?
Yeah, so, I mean, just to go back to the first thing you said, yeah, I mean, why would anyone accept partition? I mean, why would anyone accept that a foreign power will decide on behalf of a people's what happens to their lands and what happens to them? And I don't know, you know, a lot of people say, oh, how come, like, if you just, you know, Arabs had just accepted partition, everything would be okay today and it would be two states living side by side. Why should we live side by side? Why should we live side by side when we've always been mixed? It's who we are. You know, why, like, I don't believe in borders. I don't believe in separation. I don't believe that, you know, people should be separated from each other. Palestine is like this big, you know, wherever you can, you can drive from, like, you know, one side to the other in like an hour and a half. You know, it's why should it be separated? And no Palestinians were part of that discussion. The Palestinian leadership, no, I mean, it's like, again, and where we are today, where you have, you know, certain governments making decisions about other peoples without a single one of them ever being at the table. So, you know, that's just to say that, I think, you know, separation, borders, walls, all of that is not a way to live. And I think we should all reject that. Palestinians at the time, there was a Palestinian, you know, government. There were, you know, the Ottomans set up a system in which they had Palestinians as mayors, as sort of in local, you know, leadership positions. But there were political parties, and in the film, it sort of addresses the, you know, the five Palestinian political parties,
right.
And Hulud is very much a part of that, you know, way of thinking. And they were that sort of part of the revolt is interesting to talk about, because it was a farmer led revolt. It started in the countryside. Those were also the people who were like face to face with the British military. In the cities, though, there was a leadership. There was a Palestinian leadership. They were trying to speak the same language as the British, or the English. But, like, I mean, in another sense, they were, you know, they were going to the UK. They were proposing, you know, like pushing for an independent Palestinian state. You have that one scene in the film where Yusuf finally is like, you know, a guest, you know, emir who he works for invites him to be part of that. And there's this, you know, political conversation in which some of the men in the room are saying, well, maybe Zionism isn't so bad for us. Maybe it's good for business, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. And
that's, you know, a great scene, because you're like, hey, what do you think, Yusuf? And he's like, it's pretty bad out there. My dad just got killed anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
No, I think, and then to continue that, you know, this relationship, this marriage that, you know, is not going well, in part because Amir is effectively a collaborator with the Zionist colonizers. And we find out halfway through that he is being paid. And in fact, his association, the Muslim Association, I believe, is being supported by, you know, some Zionist benefactors. And he thinks this is totally fine. And his wife, who is a journalist, who is aghast at this. Tell me how realistic this was.
Yeah.
Was this happening? And what advantage did some people who wanted to be politically relevant, or they in their ideas, so easily sold out, kind of, to say, for lack of a better term, like the rebellion?
Yeah. So that I was really surprised when I was doing the research for this film, when I started to read about, you know, so they had these you know, political committees that were the Muslim Christian Associations. They were actually called the Muslim Christian Associations. And they were like basically Palestinians, mostly in the cities, mostly in urban areas. And they were part of the political parties and, like, this discussion in how to gain independence from the British.
Mm-hmm.
So the Zionist Commission formed. They actually founded these Muslim groups. They are the ones who founded them. They not just like gave money to them, but actually founded them, created them, and found like a couple of people in different cities. And so I read about like the mayor of Tiberias and the mayor of this, like they all like became part of that. And they were receiving checks from the Zionist Commission. The Zionist Commission had the Office of Arab Affairs. So that's what Khalud finds in the film, these checks. It's like from the Zionist Commission and from the Office of Arab Affairs.
Yeah.
In which there was actually a guy, a Zionist guy who like founded these things, because it was a way to break the secular, you know, Muslim Christian associations, which were like national, you know, organizations. And I think it's amazing because, of course, you know, it's like, my God, this is like stuff that happens today. It was like happening back then.
Wait, you mean break them up, be like, oh, no, no, Christians and Muslims working together, this bad. Let's like to, just have a Muslim association.
Like, let's have a Muslim association because they were like, and actually it was a Muslim like pro-Zionist organization, right?
Wow, yeah.
These guys were pro-Zionist. So it's like, oh, okay. Like, it was a way to sort of, I mean, divide and conquer. I mean, it's right. The oldest colonial trick in the book. Like, how do you control a population, you find ways to divide them and conquer them and find, you know, like separate them from each other. And I think in the case of Palestine, it's really interesting because we are such a, you know, mixed place.
Right.
There, you know, and it's still going on today. It's right. still going on today when you look at like Palestine, like the Israelis like have like, they let Druze, you know, the Druze community into the army. You know, so now the Druze are like, there's a tension between, you know, the Druze and like everybody else, or like, you know, it's just like, it's just all these things about how to just sort of isolate communities, separate communities so yes. that the one power becomes the strongest power because all the little people are no longer connected to each other.
Absolutely. I did want to pick up on one last thing just to mention that it's very clear in focusing on British colonial rule also that like, not only was Zionism seen as an imperial outpost that it has continued to be under, you know, American, you know, whatever, like support, but also it really was this like meant to be a silver bullet for the quote unquote Jewish question in a not anti, like fairly anti-Semitic way. Like Europe's got this Jewish problem. You know, there were, again, the beginnings of people fleeing, but, you know, the, obviously the ravages of the Holocaust had yet to happen. And there was all, it was kind of like, well, let's just use this land. Let's just use these people who are easier allegedly to subdue, who we dehumanize for many reasons, mostly because they're Arab or Muslim. There's a lot of Islamophobia, that you sort of depict that I think is very, I can only imagine how true that is. And this is the Jewish problem. This is the problem. The Jews are a problem to be solved. And so kind of two birds, one stone, here you go.
Yeah.
And so to also remember that like the beginnings of Zionism were not about, you know, benevolence or, you know, real safe haven. It was kind of like, this is just, let's just put them here. Problem solved kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I think for sure. I mean, I think like you said, I mean, that, you know, the population in Palestine was, you know, the Jewish immigrants were coming in and it was from you could say from 1905 to like 19, those numbers were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Why were those numbers getting bigger? Because they were fleeing Europe. The Holocaust hadn't started yet, but of course there were pogroms, there was anti-Semitism, there was fascism, like that community was being focused on, and it's European racism, like the kinds of things that Europeans have done to their own people.
Right.
And then instead of dealing with it, was like, oh, let's just put them over there. That's how we'll solve it. We just put them over there because they don't have, and even the United States, look at the United States, they closed their doors, you know, to Jews who were fleeing persecution. So it's all like, how can we use this for our own, our own benefit. And it's really sick. It's really sick thing to think about.
Yes. And again, it's like, it also is what makes the film really accessible. I think in a way that you, even though, yeah, like it is very intimate. I do feel like I get to know the characters and I like them and I'm rooting for some, you know, and the acting's excellent. I mean, you did a really fantastic job, truly, really, really well done. And it's like song remains the same. I've seen these scenes here and now, and it is kind of, you know, when anyone tells you it's complicated, I do feel like this film, because of its also historical accuracy, but it's like, look, we all have eyes. We're reading the news. We see it's what's going on now. And it's kind of the same thing. This is about colonialism. This is a settler colonial project, Zionism. It does stem from, you know, the British colonial rule and all of the ravages they did around the world. I did want to ask you about the story of the village. The village, which In the film, is it Al-Basis or is...
In the film, it's Al-Basma.
Basma, yeah.
Basma, but it's a mix. In reality, it's sort of the mix, the baby of two actual villages. So it's a fictional village in the film of Al-Basma, but in reality, it's Al-Bassa, mm-hmm. which is a village in the north of Palestine, in which the incident that happens in the film actually occurred. But that's not a village near Jerusalem. And I was very interested in exploring like class and also this character who would move between his village and Jerusalem. So I needed like a village that was more, closer to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So there
yeah.
is a village called Lifta, which I sort of thought about. So it's sort of the baby of Lifta and Al-Bassa became Al-Basma.
Yes.
Yeah.
So explain what happened in actual history when it came to there's a rebel attack on the British and yeah. then.
There's an attack on a convoy. Mm-hmm. The rebels, put out an explosive and it blows up this convoy and the British go in. The nearest village is who they blame for that. And so they go into this village in the film. And in reality, that's what happened in reality. And they go into this village and it's surrounded at the break of dawn. And they spend the whole day in the village sort of just, torturing everybody. And then they actually put the villagers on a bus. The men of the village on the bus to sort of give them a taste of their own medicine and like have the bus blown up.
Wow.
So I heard about this incident from a friend and then I read about it in a number of material, including some of the British soldiers who were involved in that incident talked about it later. And I had one screening in which there was a man from that village in the screening. And he said, when he watched the film, it was this older man. And he said, I just want you to know, I never thought that I would see my village represented and this thing that happened in our yeah. village represented on screen. But I also want you to know something else. The best men in our village, the best men were put on that bus. And it was a really heartbreaking moment. And he said he was a little boy at that time and he remembered it.
I mean, it's like the little boy that you depict as well. Just yeah. sort of watching this all play out. Yeah, I mean, there's moments like that. That is really terrifying. And I also think this is, I guess, one of the last questions is, you see the apparatus that the British establish. You know, Liam Cunningham's character comes in. And he's like, well, we need outposts. We're going to have outposts here, here, here. We're going to, northern border, prevent anything coming in from Lebanon, and you see these checkpoints, one of the first scenes is, Yusuf getting asked for his ID. I mean, this real sense of occupation and fascism is very apparent and that the British set up. How easily does that change hands? I mean, into like, I guess, at post-Nakba, when do the British finally leave? And then how easily does this sort of apparatus of militarism get subsumed by, Zionists?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a slow trade over because, you have like Wingate and he has these special night squads,
right.
which are, militant groups based in the settlements. Okay. And then, there were, of course, there was a lot of training and like a lot of like, Jewish like militant groups, Irgun and Haganah, whatever they actually were a lot of that they had like gotten from the British and they learned from the British. So, and I think in terms of the entire system of control and occupation, like the British set up the courts, they set up administrative detention. They set up, sort of the idea of collective punishment, like all these things that now the Israelis use is very much set up on paper and in practice at that moment. And so in some ways it was like a sort of like, okay, and when the British leave in 1947, 1948, and, now it's Israel, a lot of these systems, I think most of these systems are already in place.
they learned, right? They learned from the best kind of thing.
Yeah, they learned from the best. And the British were the best. It was like one of their like colonies. They had so many colonies. They become, you know, they, like you said, like, you know, that character of, you know, Liam Cunningham coming from India, and like he set up these things, Tegart's forts, which are still all around, you know, everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they had taken all the rules, the lessons of all their other places they had, you know, colonized, and Palestine was one of the last. So it was like all the lessons, like how to perfect, you know, population control and colonialism was all brought here.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, another moment, like just lastly, like you, I think the diverse nature of Palestine very much sticks out. I mean, one of the characters is a priest mm-hmm. who is at one point robbed by a British officer, stopped and then robbed. And he's a, you know, yeah, Christian priest. And do you, you mentioned that earlier, but do you feel like, does that, I mean, this is like a really, I mean, actually, I think the answer to me, the answer, like looking at this film, you're like, oh, the fact that empires have always seen Palestine as a strategic outpost have doomed, you know, are the reason that for, you know, the full decolonization movement has not been successful in the way that it has, you know, in other places, and perhaps also the ability to divide more so, divide and conquer, and having these kind of like proxies. I mean, Israel's sort of like a pro. It is a proxy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Israel is a proxy. It's still like that. It's still seen as like the Western foot in the region, right? Like this is going to ensure that like Western interests are met. You know, you have the beginning of the film. You know, Afra, the little girl, is walking along this pipeline. And it doesn't, you know, we don't say it in the film, but that pipeline, you know, she said, if we cut it open, will we see, you know, from Haifa to Iraq, you know, this is like all the oil, all the petrol that's coming on. And it is what it was. It was already about that, you know,
yes.
In, you know, of course, in the 30s, it was already, you know, people are like, oh, but Palestine doesn't have petrol. No, we don't. But we certainly have the way to like get it on the pipeline onto ships. You know, and ports that would, you know, feed the rest of Europe.
Yes. No, that's a fantastic moment. Anne-Marie, I want to ask you then about this, just filmmaking, where is this film? How was this made? I mean, there's a lot of people I see, you know, the credits, and it was like, clearly there was a huge effort, but also you brought it together and it's so excellent. So maybe tell me about like, where you're going from here with this, how people can see it, and what you want to do with the film now.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was a tremendous effort, and the film was, you know, the film is about war. It's born from war, and we are still in war now. And I'm talking to you. Yes, we had this like last night. We stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, what is going to happen?
Yeah.
Actually, we all had like a number of drinks and we're like, is this like our goodbye?
No, I know. Like,
you know, but anyway, we'll see. See, ceasefire, that doesn't include Lebanon,
right.
Or whatever. And we'll see how long that lasts, because I think it's already been broken.
Violated,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, it was made by a lot of people, a huge crew and a huge team and a huge number of people who like, in the worst and worst, darkest moments of our history came together to make this. And it's, you know, this is what we can do as artists, and we can say something and we can tell our story and we can hope that it connects with people and that we remain connected to each other instead of divided. So I have hopes that the film will continue to travel. It's been really an amazing, you know, life for the film already. Mm-hmm. But now it's, you know, it's released in US cinemas, and I'm really, you know, it's been amazing, the sort of feedback, but it's in cinemas, being distributed by Watermelon Pictures. And I hope that the film continues to travel and that it sparks conversation and debate. That's the main thing.
Absolutely. I'm so glad. I mean, I'm just looking up, like, even just in my area, there's like, you know, a bunch of screenings within, you know, a 15-minute drive, and it's excellent. So everybody, go see Palestine 36. Support the film. I don't know, what else are you asking people to do to sort of promote it or support it?
I mean, to go see it, and to go see it in the theater, and to go see it as like with people, I think is really important.
Yes.
And to talk about it, and that these are the stories that have been, and especially for American audiences, these are the stories that Americans have been denied access to. And we have been making these films for a long time, and we have amazing filmmakers, and, you know, there are many stories, and this is just one of them. But like, these films never get to like get to a U.S. audience. It's very difficult. And there's a very specific reason for that, because it's like not on the agenda for us to actually connect to each other. So this is the way to resist it. And I think Americans are really, you know, right now, especially with what's happening in the world and in the United States, you know, this is really the time that we have to connect.
Absolutely. And I, you know, my also thought was that this should be in schools, you know, that don't ban history from being taught or whatnot. But this is one of those films where, like, I think it would be formative, you know, if you saw this at an age where you're learning about the issue or not at all. And this is your first film ever. I think it could definitely connect. You have so many characters of different ages and backgrounds. And so I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. If it's something you know about Palestine, I think you will connect and read it in a certain way. And if you know nothing, it's a film. It's a big epic film, and it's a story, and it's very, you know, it's very personal in that way. And I think it will definitely.
It's like you immediately are clued into what's going on. And I appreciate it. And fuck the UK just one last time. No. And also the US that took over. But thank you so much for sharing your time. And Anne-Marie Jasser, everybody go see Palestine 36 wherever you can. And take very good care, please. If you ever do events in LA, maybe I've missed it. I think I missed it.
Yeah.
Then I'll see you here. But until then, take care.
I hope so. Thank you so much. Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Make sure to go Palestine 36. Go see it. It's excellent. I cannot recommend enough. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting the show. And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.